This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
This is what matters. Teaching her what is a reasonable way for a loving person to talk to you? That's the game we're playing. We're playing this is how loving people engage. This is the most important thing I could ever give you. And so I said to her, I'm sorry, I totally lost my mind. You should never let anyone talk to you like that. No boyfriend, no teacher, no coach, no one should talk to you like that ever in your life. No boss, no husband, nobody. And not me either. And I'm sorry.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is Motherhood and Transitions with Kelly Corrigan. Kelly is a four-time New York Times bestselling author, the host of PBS's long-form interview show, Tell Me More, and the podcast, Kelly Corrigan Wonders, which has just crossed 11 million downloads. 13 million downloads
yesterday.
Man, yesterday. So clearly this came from 2 weeks ago because things are blowing up.
Yeah.
O Magazine calls Kelly the voice of a generation, and Huffington Post says Kelly is our poet laureate of the ordinary. Wow. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I am great, and I am excited. My wife and I are big fans of your work. We are fellow Bay Area people, even though I believe you got out recently.
I drifted away. I became an empty nester. I couldn't stay in that.
Yes, which is, well, that's one of our topics of today. So I just want to say we've enjoyed your work, your books, your podcasts. We've gone to your fundraiser at the UCSF Children's Hospital. So just really have appreciated your work as a local person and as a very non-local and sprawling influence on our world.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's really nice.
Empty nest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm first, this term is so interesting, empty nest. And I've heard some other terms recently. I wanted to run by you to see what you thought about them.
Okay.
One of them is, so the idea, some people are saying like empty nest feels so like depleting and diminished and sad and like our life is over, as it like it's just we're empty. And so these other folks were talking about bird launchers.
Okay.
Right, a little more like
I'm going to rate these for you. So yes, give me everything.
Okay. Bird launchers or emerging eagles?
I'm not going to vote for either of those. Although I understand sort of the underlying concept that it's the emphasis is on what's lost, not what's gained or what might yet be to come.
Yes.
And that's probably right. I mean, free birds, a friend of mine said free birds. So I free was birds. Like, oh, that, okay. That's working for me. But, you know, probably because I'm of a certain age where we screamed free bird at the end
what
of it.
What song is it you want to hear?
Free bird.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that probably each person has a different timestamp on how long it takes them to transition from the idea being something around loss to embracing what is now possible that hasn't been possible for, you know, almost two decades. The thing that I felt the most was something is ending here and it will not come again. Mm. And this thing that is ending is the thing that I had been most looking forward to in life. Like, for whatever reason, you know, that's what I wanted above all. I wanted to be a mom and I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have 4 by 40. That was like my mantra, 4 kids by the time I turned 40. And I had 2 and then I got diagnosed with breast cancer and was in chemotherapy on and off for 2 years. And that was the end of that. My ovaries went, the whole deal. And that was a huge loss for me. Even in the context of this larger victory, which is to say I became healthy again. And it's not something I ever think about, except for maybe during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, or maybe if I'm asked to give a little talk. Otherwise, I almost forget that it happened. It's been almost 20 years. Mm. We're 1 and 2 when I found this enormous 7-centimeter tumor in my breast. I was actually in the bathtub with them. That's how little they were. It was just like easier to get in than it was to try to stay dry on the inside.
Yeah.
And I felt that time where we were together under the same roof and cooking and fighting and learning and adjusting and discovering was kind of, in my mind, it was like the highlight of my life. And also, so many mistakes are made, as you well know.
Yes.
Not because you're so flawed, but because you talk to a lot of people about parenting.
We are human.
Yeah. It's kind of a cannonball run. And in the silence after it's over and they're gone, I felt a strong sense of reflection, and which sometimes brought me to a place of regret. Like, there were things that I wish I could do again, that I wish I could have done better, that I wish I could have done more calmly, more patiently, with a bigger sense of humor about it all.
Totally.
And, you know, I was a little like white knuckling it at times. And so the other piece of it for me was this sense of like, oh, I could have done a better job. I could have given you more. I could have done a better job emphasizing what mattered and letting go of all the rest. You know, like, I just took it too seriously. I didn't have that, the kind of the looseness with which I approach all other parts of my life. I'm actually not type A in any other way. And I'm super comfortable with failure and throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. Like, I don't lose track very often that there are 8 billion people here, and it doesn't really matter like what any one of us is trying, even if we're failing in public. Like, I just don't really care. There's so many people in the public sphere, and there's so much going on there that's so much more important than anything I may or may not be able to pull off in my tiny world. But with parenting, I couldn't achieve that same like detached, benevolent vibe. Like, it really felt like it mattered. It really felt like it mattered that they wore sunblock and that they say please and thank you. And that they write thank you notes to every single person, and that they hand in, that they know how to hand in a paper, and that they do their little exercises to help their knees when they have shin splints. And, you know, just everything felt too loaded. And I wish I could deconstruct it and put it all back together again one more time.
Did you know this at the time, or is this upon reflection, or you know, sequential reflections through their different periods of life?
We went to a wedding this summer, my husband and I, and we went to the rehearsal dinner. We were seated across the table from this lovely couple who was maybe 35 and they had their first kid. And my husband and I were just stepping over each other to give them advice.
Yeah.
And what I was hearing with like my, you know, sort of meta observing eye and ear was, oh my God, we both want to do it again. I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
And so I think it has become sort of clearer and more crystallized over time. But even then, you know, I felt like I would lose myself to an emotion, anger, frustration, disappointment, just so heavy on a kid. That's such a heavy emotion to put on a kid. And then I would recover a better point of view, a broader perspective, a lighter touch. So then I would feel guilty because I was so uneven. And I had heard a very persuasive argument early on that even if you're too much of a hard ass, being consistently whatever you are, mm-hmm. kids can adjust to that. And that's actually weirdly comforting. It's like, I know what she's going to do.
It's predictable.
I know if I leave my saxophone at school, she's going to be mad. Mm-hmm. But it's worse for me to be mad one day and then the next time be like, oh, honey, don't worry about it. People forget things all the time. Your father just left a suitcase on an airplane. Like, let's go down and get it. Like, that's more unnerving. So then I had like this double guilt.
Right.
That I had taken it too seriously, but that I didn't take it too seriously consistently.
Oh, man. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So let's solve that, Dr. Dan.
Yes.
That all in perspective. For
yes.
Me.
What I, okay. I have
Heal
so
me.
Many, so many thoughts. So many thoughts. Okay. There is this so first of all, I relate very mm-hmm. much to what mm-hmm. you're saying. And there is this duality of our experience and guilt and regret in the micro moments and the macro moments of parenting. I say the caring, conscientious parent, the people that are really taking, you know, taking it seriously. And then there's our children's experience of us and their upbringing. And when I listened recently to your conversation with Mary Louise Kelly, which was awesome, and I had the privilege of also having a conversation with her, the stories that align was when she asked her, you know, she had a lot of life pressures on her and was away because of all of her great important things she was doing in the world of journalism and correspondence. And she asked her kid that big question, like, you know, basically, did I do okay, so to speak? And did I let you down? And it was like, deep thought. No, you're good. I think you're good. Yeah, everything's fine. Like, so
And then he was like, you got $10 for Chipotle?
Chipotle, yeah. Chipotle. That's meet my need. All I need is some Chipotle.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, I beat myself up a lot for similar reasons. And especially as someone who spends his days with kids and families and parents, you know, doing my best to support their lives and coming home and being human and sometimes getting it right. And sometimes having my kids literally say to me, Dad, given what you do, I can't believe you just said that right now. Right. Like, so what is the, how do we reconcile our own criticism, regret, and with how our kids actually, how we think they feel and their experience of growing up with us?
So two huge things. One is like repair is such a huge opportunity and is maybe like the super skill of all super skills. Like if you think about over the course of a lifetime, if you were good at repair, interpersonal repair, you would have like a materially better life experience. It would affect everything. You could, your work would be different. Your, of course, your marriage or your partnership, your relationship with your most important people, and also your relationship with your outer ring, you know, your weak ties, like being able to say, oh, I'm sorry. I was wrong about that. No, you're right. I like it. Let's do it that way. And I'm sorry, I talked over you. I shouldn't do that. Go ahead. Say it again. Let me listen this time. Like all those micro moments of repair really could change the quality of your experience on Earth. So it's a super skill. It gives back a thousand ways. And it is there for you. You know, you could say to a kid, like, and I have. I've said, and casually and more sincerely and earnestly have said, I took it so seriously. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I should have known that you were just A-okay. Mm-hmm. And you really didn't need that much intervention or prodding. And I, you know, it's like on the job learning, and and I've said all the very true things, like, you know, that was my dream. That was my dream. Mm-hmm. And you were my dream. Mm-hmm. And you are my dream. And like, that's what you're what matters to me. And mm-hmm. I don't think I was perfect. I just don't want you, Georgia or Claire, to think that I'm walking around in the world giving myself a big old pat on the back because I'm just so good at it. Like the love is constant and without question. But everything else shy of that, like, was a little bit of a shit show. And then the other piece is that now that my kids, I have one kid all the way through college and working, and I have another kid who's a junior. And when you're, and I forgot this, because I had the same exact experience when I went to University of Richmond in 1985, is when you're in college and you're comparing notes with friends, the sort of smaller errors that a conscientious and caring parent is doomed to make repeatedly are mice nuts compared to some of the things they're going to hear from their friends.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for the kids who had really deeply difficult childhoods, which were riddled by like abuse or addiction or dot, 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 like really big capital letter stressors, adverse childhood experiences.
There you go. The ACE.
But it puts it into context. Like, there's no question in my kids' minds that I love them. Mm-hmm. I love them. Mm-hmm. And I would lay down, I would lay out for those kids, and they know it. Mm-hmm. I'm never too busy. I'm never not committed. Like I can apply my whole intellect and all my life experience and every conversation I've ever had, which is considerable because I do what you do. So I can apply what I've learned from 400 interviews, what I've learned from 56 years, and like all of the love and loving energy I have for them as individuals. Like, that's a lot I could bring to bear if they should need it. The trick is that they need it like 1/100th. Of the time that I would have guessed they might have needed it. Like, I've been practicing.
Yeah.
I've been getting ready. I have like untapped potential as a parent and an advisor.
Yeah.
And it is going to stay untapped because that is the weirdest mind-bending thing about parenthood, is that here you are with all of this terrific energy and life experience, and you are ready to parcel it out in these very carefully communicated and considered packages.
Emotionally regulated the whole time, of course.
Nobody is there.
Yeah. Nobody. No one's listening. No one's listening.
It's right. Like there's a pile of mail in front of their doors and they're like, I don't even go out that door. I never even saw it. Not interested. Got to figure it out for myself. And it's like, well, what is a person to do then with this encyclopedic knowledge that is backed up by all this tremendous energy? Like, where is it to go?
Okay, I have an idea. I think you should have a podcast, a TV show.
I should write books.
Maybe write a book, right? Maybe another book, which I know there's some coming. Okay, this is, yes, yes. So I have one thing to say is, mission accomplished. Like we're talking about so many things here, but raising these young people to be these young adults, and you're ready, you're in the wings in this new chapter, and they're not needing much. And while that doesn't feel good or meet the need, maybe, wow. There's lots of parents that can't say that, right?
I mean, we live to serve. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this. I'll approach it in a different way. As I said before, I was 36, had two kids in diapers, and I had to start chemotherapy in like 4 days. Like, I got a phone call, and then the following Monday, I was in a chair getting Adriamycin Cytoxin for 9 hours. And my mom came. And she came many, many times that fall, because I did chemo for a whole day every other week. And then, you know, I was kind of useless for a couple days after each treatment. And she came, and I thought, after I started to get better and I could have other kinds of thoughts other than, holy shit, am I going to die? I thought, in a way, this must be wonderful for her to be able to love me so actively and to contribute so much to our well-being. Like, isn't this what every parent wants to do? It's like, I knew this guy who was in the Marines, and he, when we went into Iraq, he really wanted to go. And I was like, you do? And he's like, yeah, that's what I've been training for. And it was like, I understand that desire to be of service. Mm-hmm. And I know that when my dad was dying, I felt a clarity that is really hard to come by in normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew that nothing else mattered until it was over. I knew that I didn't have to do anything, call anybody, look at my phone. Like, it was just so obvious
mm-hmm.
what the work was, and no other work could compare.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of like full on immersive devotion
mm-hmm.
is kind of like the highest expression of our humanity, in my opinion. For ordinary people who don't go serve in wars, and, you know, who aren't, you're just in your regular life. Like, these are the moments.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. And everything else is like practice or rest and recovery from such moments or on-ramping to such moments. But like, if you graft a life, like, there's only 5 or 6 things that really happen where you're fully required. Only you could do it. And that's when you know it matters that you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Now the rest of the time you're competing or, you know, soothing yourself or indulging yourself in some way or whatever. Like, there's just a very small handful of times where it has to be you.
When you hear yourself talk about being there, and caring and loving and knowing, yeah, there's these micro moments of intensity and worrying about the trees when you should maybe be thinking about the forest, and you see how your kids are doing in the world, does it give you any healing against the guilt and the should-haves as you hear yourself talking about this?
Sometimes, to be totally honest, I think that I talk like that to convince myself that I am the audience for what I'm saying right now, that mm-hmm. I am trying to remind myself or convince myself that, like, see the forest through the trees, see the forest through the trees, see the forest
yeah.
through the trees.
Yeah.
And I do believe it. And I understand that to be true. I just, like, the other piece of empty nesting that I just find so weird, though I believe that it's correct, quote unquote, that it be this way at a sort of philosophical level, I also kind of can't believe it. and I should be able to believe it because it was true for me and my mother, is that a 22-year-old in the workforce, like on her list of things on her mind.
Yeah, totally.
I don't even know if I'm in the top 100.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah,
what is my
totally.
Mom,
yes.
How did my
yes.
mom factor into my universe of concerns right. and interests when I was 22? Like, I don't think she did. I
right.
think it was like, don't forget your mother's birthday.
Right.
Like, that's about how much I thought about her. Like, you're just so full of
right.
interests that have nothing to do with this lady who lives in this house, in this town, somewhere
right.
far away. Like,
yeah.
you're so irrelevant. And consequently, you don't really have that much visibility into their daily life. Like, you don't really know how they're doing. Which
right.
I think is so weird because everywhere I go, people say, how are the girls?
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know. How would I know that?
Yeah, you tell me. You follow them on Instagram.
You don't
yeah.
tell me that
yeah.
much.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know how they are. I have to see, like on Tuesday, I talked to her at 4 o'clock. She seemed pretty good then. Like, but
yeah,
you know, she's 20. Like, she's
yeah.
good and bad. Every part, every day she's horrible and every day she's great. And every week, you know, she has 17 moments where she's like, I hate everything. And
yeah.
22 where she's like, this is the greatest time of my life. You know, like they're crazy. They're 20.
Yeah. I can't, there's so many times I remember in a therapy consultation situation with parents of teenagers and young adults who are saying like, I can't believe they're doing this to me. And I can't believe they would do this. And aren't they thinking about the impact on me? And I'd say, okay, time out. Here's the deal. They're not even thinking about you to have enough intention to hurt you. You're like not even in the picture, not in a bad way, but they're living their life. And yes, that decision could maybe not be the best thing for you or how it looks to your friends or family,
totally.
But it's not about you. And that's what I've been hearing you more and more talk about in these conversations that you've been having, about how much we have to come to terms with it isn't about us anymore. Like that's what it ends. Like it's not that it ever was about us, but we clearly have a role, but we clearly had a role. We had a job.
There was a moment where you
yes.
were the only one who could soothe them.
Yes.
And that is a glorious moment to go back to those like high impact handful of moments in a whole lifetime. Like there is a moment where it's like only you can soothe this kid. Only you can feed this kid. I mean, there was time mm-hmm. where only I could feed this child. That is intense. And the asymmetry of how much I'm thinking about her and she's thinking about me is outrageous. I mean, it's like, it could be more than 1,000 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount we talk, I mean, my husband and I talk about our children every single day. We did this experiment where I was like, let's see what it would be like. Like we just talked to her on the phone, got a little download. Sounds great. Good. Bye-bye. And then I would say to Edward, let's try to not talk about her until Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Tuesday today. Let's just not bring up her name
mm-hmm.
until Saturday. Let's not speculate. Wonder what she's doing tonight. I wonder how that thing turned out. I wonder if she remembered to yep. clean the shower. Nothing. Like, let's just not touch that topic
yes.
for 4 days and like, let it come down a little bit in our consciousness.
How'd that work?
It's a very worthwhile exercise.
You did
very
it. You were able to do it. 4 days.
Yeah,
not
probably,
talking.
No, we probably didn't okay. get, we probably like Friday afternoon. I was like, I wonder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And it doesn't mean that you're not thinking about them, but I do feel like thoughts and words and actions are of course all tied to each other. And so mm-hmm. to reduce one of those is to reduce the other two. So to reduce the number of words that we're spilling about Georgia or Claire will ultimately reduce the amount of thoughts and the amount of actions. Because the other thing that sometimes we say to each other is, let's not talk to her until Sunday. Like, let's try to let more days go between touching base just to give her time without us in her head. Like somebody said to me once, they're trying to live a life where you're not in their head. You're not, they don't mm-hmm. hear you all the time on their shoulder, like the little angel who's saying, don't forget, you know, right. You need to eat your protein and a little fresh air will make the day go better. And maybe try magnesium, you know, and if you hang up your dress in the shower while you're taking a shower, all the wrinkles will come out and all the things that we, all this stuff that we've been saving for them, these little notes and ideas and suggestions, you just have to throw them into the wind and let them fly away.
A long time ago, my wife and I were on our honeymoon in Central America, and we were in this beautiful jungly place with a like a thatchy place we were staying in and this shared natural hot tub like by a few of the huts outside. And we're in there with this older couple, and it's very small, so you're kind of talking to each other, and they're talking about how much they miss their kids and how they think they're going to cut their trip a couple days short because they really feel like they need to get home. And my wife and I are like, you know, being polite and with them and engaging. And then afterward at dinner, can you believe them? Can look where we are. They're talking about their kids. They're going to cut their vacation short. What is up? You know, just fast forward 2 or 3 years, we're having like the same conversations, right? There's this thing that happens that it can become all consuming. And then over time, we don't get the memo. I think of that country song, Last Time for Everything. You don't get the memo when they're not going to sleep with you ever again. Mm-hmm. You're not going to read to them in their bed ever again. Mm-hmm. And as you point out, it's like all of a sudden you're on this IV drip that just drips less, drips less, drips less. And then there's drop off or move out or military, wherever they go.
Or they get a spouse and they're like not coming home for Christmas.
Right. And that's it.
And you can kind of have a funny feeling that the spouse doesn't really like you. Like that's a whole nother thing.
You know what I mean? That's a whole nother thing.
Back to moms who are like, oh, I don't think that kid is really into their whole scene.
And then going back to what you said, there's this whole thing that, okay, wait, we're done. And yet it was totally fine to be the kid and be done in that way with our parents. Like we didn't even think about that. Like, cause we're just living our life and that's what we're supposed to be doing. And so the pendulum turns and it's like, wait, what? I'm in that situation now? I didn't even know I put my parents in that situation.
And also I was stupidly like, I mean, I'm just so much cooler than my mom. Like they're going to want to be around me because I'm just much cooler than my mom. My mom, in terms of like generational divides, like I never listened to my mom's music. We would never wear the same sweater. We would never like the same food. You know, my girls and I are like, ooh, let's get sushi, or like, ooh, I love that. Can I borrow that? Or, you know, I mean, the music stuff. I mean, my mom was listening to like Que Sera Sera and Perry Como. And I listened to the same stuff the girls listen to.
Right.
So culturally, like there's just been a huge shift. But you know, one thing I've been thinking about lately that I find really helpful is if you say, it felt good to be in these very intimate relationships. Like if you take the kids out of it as individual people in the world, but rather just abstract it one layer to like, what was it that I liked? It was like, I liked being in kind of intense, complex relationships that were teaching me a lot. So then it's like, okay, well, you can find that. That's available to you. And if you liked helping people or giving to people or being useful, which is really like the thing I'm addicted to. There are plenty of people to give your love to. So just let, if you decide to create the space by letting them be less interested in you and less a part of your flow, right? And over there doing whatever they're doing, however they're doing it, to whatever ends. And you can shift your focus to your very best friends or your parents, or your new town where you live, or a new project that you're doing. Like the emotional states are still available to you, even though like the parent-child thing is so singular.
Yeah.
The state of feeling useful, totally available to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know so many people that are in a state of need right now who I love dearly, who I'm happy to like be a backboard for them, just let them vent to me, you know, give them the sort of love and validation that they deserve. No problem. I could do that all day long. And so if that's what I'm missing, it's still available. I don't have to grieve it, because although I am not going to get it from Georgia and Claire,
right,
I can certainly get it from other relationships.
So I think you just laid out the ingredients for transitioning.
It is. It's like reinvest, to totally reinvest in what you do have, whatever work you have, whatever community you're a part of, whatever energy you've got. Like there are homes for all of it in your life now. And I mean, it's hard to worry too much about anything when you're in service. Like that's my big feeling about a lot of things, like about say therapy. Is I think, better to devote those hours to just service, like to lose yourself rather than to turn toward yourself and say, how do I really feel? You know, what's going on for me? Well, it's like, or let go of yourself entirely and point everything toward some other target. It might be just as soothing.
You've described the goodbyes, the different college goodbyes with the girls at different times, and with the like intense, you know, snotty breakdown cry, and then, you know, pulling it back together for the goodbye. Did you find there was ongoing levels or continuing levels of ongoing grief? Like how do you transition, or how have you transitioned?
Well, so I've written these essays for the New York Times, and I think I've written four of them. And one of them was about letting go of Claire. One of them was about trying to give Georgia my last set of suggestions and advice. One of them was about how to celebrate a kid who just did something hard, like applying to college. And I have thought about contributing another one that's about the 10th goodbye.
Because
I just haven't seen that. I haven't seen that sort of deep dive into that moment. And it definitely changes. Of course, you acclimate. Everybody acclimates. Thank God. It's one of the great, great assets of humanity that you don't really have to earn. It just kind of happens naturally that you get more used to things. But also there's something that happens between the first goodbye and the 10th goodbye, which is releasing your previous version of who they were and creating space to actually receive who they are this time. Like somebody told me once on my pod that, the huge growth 0 to 36 months. And then the other period of growth that rivals those first 3 years of life is 18 to 21, just massive, crazy development. And as you're coming into your prefrontal cortex, which supposedly doesn't fully come online until you're 25. So all this moment is enormous. And it'd be such a shame if you were so locked into the 18-year-old version of your kid that you missed like, oh, look at that. She doesn't do that thing anymore. Or she does this other thing now. Or did you notice? And so one of the things that happens on the 10th goodbye is that there's a little pride swirled in there. You're like, you're interesting. Yeah. You are interesting to me. You are curious. You are funnier than you used to be, which means that you're more comfortable in your body than you used to be, which means that you're more confident than you used to be. Like, which means you trust me more than you trusted me before. Like you know, so kind of allowing yourself the opportunity to kind of revel in what is standing right before you and how that's evolving. That can be a really fun emotional state to swim around in.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg. Did you have him too? Yeah. So one of the messages on his, I guess his last book was, Congrats, You're Having a Teen, where he dispels a lot of myths about teenagers. And one of the things that was very helpful to me, and I know many of our listeners and clients, is said, most of your relationship, if everything goes as it should, the years are with your kids as adults. That relationship are decades longer than your relationship with them as children. And to look at the long haul as we're going about these bumps and these worries and this loss and this grieving, it's like you're going to have a lot of time with them. And it's all about the relationship. That changes, but it's all about the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you one thing, that having pretty serious cancer at a young age, it really undoes the assumption that you're going to have this long life.
Mm-hmm.
So like most days, I think I'm going to live till I'm 80, but there is this awareness in me that it's like, maybe, like hopefully. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you get all that payback over time. But I mean, every single reading I do, there's some little old lady who comes up to me and like grabs my hands at the end and says, I had cancer 45 years ago. Look at me. I'm out on a Tuesday night going to a reading and it fills me up. But I did lose a friend who was 46 with an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. So I don't, I just think about her a lot and I think you don't always get that. So yes, hopefully.
Yes.
9 times out of 10. Most people
live
a long time.
I hear what you're
hopefully
saying.
Hopefully we'll all be one of them.
Well, and you're also bringing this really important perspective of we don't know how much time we have.
Yeah.
And I think for those of us who are thinkers to a strength and to a fault, over analyzers and over analyzers, could really get lost with, like, ideally it's that mindfulness practice of we're living in the present and we are accepting what is and we are making the best of what is. And it's really easy, as we all know, to both future trip and worry and live in the past of that regret and I wish I should have. And it's this balance of how do you hold on to these precious moments? I was listening to one of your recent podcasts. I think it was with The Humble Parent with Julie Lithcott-Haynes, great person, How to Raise an Adult. And you're talking about, how much time do we really have? Like, how much time do I get this year? Like, with her, with them? Like, a couple days, right?
Some days.
Yeah. And when we think about our needs versus their needs, they're often wanting to come home and just be in a comfortable place and not have maybe the stressors of the world and smell some of the smells and get a snuggle. But they may not want to maximize their quality time with us the way we're like, we're puppy dogs. We're ready.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
See that? No, sure. I mean, I'll take you. Okay. Do you want to have friends over? Love to see you. Hi, guys. So annoying. So annoying.
We're so annoying. Yeah.
I know. Love is annoying. Love makes us a little annoying. Whatever. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes,
agree
yes.
Agree to all. I love Julie. Yes. We've done tons of podcasts together. And there's so
I know. Great. They're so good. They're so good. And when I was listening to you talk about, and both of you talking about your approaches, now and your evolving selves as people and as parents and how you've let go, and that they're these other humans and you're not even a parent anymore. You're like, you're this other thing to them. I actually thought a lot about your dad.
Mm.
I thought about Greeny. And there is I believe it's in Tell Me More, where you talk about this time in your life when you were maybe focused on yourself and weren't seeing the big picture. And I think it was like 20s. Because I say, my wife and I say this to her all the time, like, bring this up. Like, maybe this should be our response to our kids who are very similar ages to yours. I think Greeny said to you, like, that's okay, sweetie. You'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it was this kind of like this, you'll figure it out when you're ready. Mm-hmm. Not I'm coming in to save you. I'm coming in to tell you how to do this. Mm-hmm. And I felt from a lot of things I've been listening to you talk about in this transition, is you doing a similar thing with your girls? Like,
on the best day, that is the answer. You'll figure it out. You mm-hmm. know more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
It is. But, you know, I think sometimes I feel like it's a little bit of an occupational hazard. And I wonder if you feel this way, like to do this podcasting thing and to be mm-hmm. in conversation with people all the time, reflecting on life experiences and our most important relationships. You do kind of have like a lot of stuff on the tip of your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it feels even harder to say, like when they bring you something, to not like pounce on it as like, ooh, I know this one. Let me tell you. I answer. You know, like you're the kid in the class with your arm up. I got it. Here's what you do.
Yeah.
With friends, you really want to, you know, instead of just conveying to them, like what my husband and I call it, the face of love, like the Greeny, my dad would just, you know, if I brought him something like that, he'd just be like this. This is this
big
huge
smile.
Like, yeah. Big, huge smile. Like, lovey. Yeah. I can't wait to see what you do.
Yes. Lovey. That's it. Lovey. Yes. Yes.
And
yeah.
So his, like the thing that I can summon his voice in my ear whenever I want of him saying, you're a special girl, Lovey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like that combination of like, you have it, you have what you need and you'll figure it out. Is a lot. Like that's probably all you need to say every single time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to resist the opportunity to be like, oh, I have a little anecdote that's just right for this moment.
Totally.
So Claire, let me tell you, when I was a junior in college, you know, and it's like, oh God.
Oh, but no, but then sandwich that very helpful anecdote with some really wise thing you just heard from an expert in the field from who you just interviewed. Like, I mean, what a beautiful sandwich. Let me give you a personal experience that let me tell you what the experts say about this.
That's why I think it's an occupational hazard.
Exactly.
Like my girls, so there's this neuroscientist, and I've interviewed her a couple times. I'm interviewing her again. Her name's Lisa Feldman Barrett, top 1% of scientists cited worldwide. She's like it.
Yes.
And she wrote this incredible book called How Emotions Are Made. And it completely shifted everything for me. And I am constantly LFBing my kids. I'm like, well, you know what Lisa Feldman Barrett says. Well, you know what I was talking
about. LFBing, it's a verb. It's a verb.
It is. Okay. I LFB them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I LFB Tammy, my podcast producer. Like, we LFB each other. Like, so God help us when we find like terra firma. Like ideological terra firma, it's like it seems to apply to everything. Mm-hmm. And my kids are like, okay, good. So the neuroscience says. Plus, you know, the other thing I try to remind myself that I think is a good incentive to zip it is you're stealing their satisfaction.
Yes.
Because there is no deeper satisfaction than untying the knot yourself. It's like one thing, you know, you
so
take
true.
Your jewelry out and it's all knotted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you just slowly and methodically undo it. Like there's a deep human satisfaction available to someone in that moment. And either you're going to steal it or you're going to let them do it. And if you let them do it, that great feeling is theirs. And that's a compounding experience. I mean, once you do it, then the next time you're like, no, I can do this. I've done this before. Like, so then you're stealing like the building blocks of this compounding you know, self-efficacy. And yes, that's really a terrible thing to do to a kid.
Let them own themselves.
Yes, and it's fine, and everything's fine. They don't, they're going to do it. They're going to screw it all up, and then they're going to fix it all. And like most of the time, you know, some experts we've had on the show, like this guy, George Bonanno, who is a big time scientist and researcher at Columbia, he dispels some great myths. And one is that like resilience is rare. He's like, resilience isn't rare. Like almost everybody rebounds. Almost everybody, like in the 80s, 80% plus people bounce back from almost everything. Horrible things.
Right.
Breakups and failures and not getting into any college and getting cut from a team and all the things that you might be trying to fender benders, losing all their money on a stupid online bet, trying drugs. Almost everybody bounces almost every single time.
Yeah.
Like that does a lot for me.
Yeah.
That helps me.
Yes.
And if I marry that to like, don't steal their satisfaction.
Nice.
Like, and don't undermine their self-efficacy. Like if I tie the three of those things together in my mind fast enough, I can beat myself to the desire to advise.
Boom. That's it.
Well, I don't do that. I mean, you should know. I'm going to give you George's phone number and Claire's phone number. You'd be like, hey, I just want to say, your mom said, like, how? Yeah. They'd be like, she's at 40%.
Hey, I think, remember, Hall of Fame baseball's 333, right?
Thank you very much.
So there you go. Hall of Fame. Kelly Corrigan, parent Hall of Fame.
Never.
Okay, Kelly, so much more to discuss and no time to do so. So we're at the parent footprint moment question.
Yeah.
Here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and or those you love.
One time I was really mad because Georgia had this pain in her knees. And so we took her to Children's Hospital, Oakland, which is the place I've devoted so much of my energy to. Mm-hmm. And she went to physical therapy and it was kind of expensive. We had to pay out of pocket. And then of course, like physical therapy completely depends on you doing it between your sessions. So you don't just do it once a week with a physical therapist, like piano or something, like you're supposed to practice. And it became just this source of endless nagging. Every day I'd be like, did you do physical therapy? And then I was so frustrated because the thing she wanted, which was to play lacrosse, was inhibited by her unwillingness to do these stupid exercises, which was probably inhibited by her disbelief that it would work. You know, it takes a minute to really believe that, like, I mean, I don't do it. I don't do any exercises. I don't do any stretching. I know so much information about how to live a long, healthy life, and I completely flout all of it. And except for drinking and sleep, I don't drink and I sleep. I really pay
sleep.
That's good. Sleep. Yep. But I flipped out on her. I yelled at her really bad, way too much for like a seventh grader. And we were in our kitchen and as I finished yelling, and it was probably like 30 seconds of like a full volume heat blast, I saw this mom I vaguely knew, like go for her little pep step walk past my house. And because I saw her, I saw myself from her point of view. I saw the scene, you know, inside this window of this house where this mom's like flipping out over a seventh grader, not doing her PT exercises. Like what percentage of adults do you think do their PT exercises? Like the
expectation
that I had on this kid was so stupid and wrong and way over the top. And I saw myself and I thought, Oh my God, Kelly, why are you taking this so seriously? Like, so it like snapped me out of it. And it was like, who cares? Like, if she doesn't ever play lacrosse again, or she doesn't play this season, or she doesn't play in the big game, like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching her how, what is a reasonable way for a loving person to talk to you? That's the game we're playing. We're not playing the, like, see how your lacrosse season can go game. We're playing the, like, this is how loving people engage. This is the most important thing I could ever give you. And so I said to her, I'm sorry. I totally lost my mind. You should never let anyone talk to you like that. No boyfriend, no teacher, no coach. No one should talk to you like that ever in your life. No boss, no husband, nobody. And no, and not me either. And I'm sorry.
Repair.
I hope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The theme that I'm, one of the many themes I'm hearing is not to take these things so seriously and to do our best in the moments, to let our kids have their own satisfaction, to repair when we've blown it, because if we care and are conscientious, we are going to blow it. And now, being on the other side, try to just hold on to those moments the best you can, because there's a whole new relationship with new rules and
players.
New players, right? New players.
And face of love. Like, yeah. you get through life on face of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, fewer words.
Yeah.
More smiles. Talk less, smile more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your experiences, your wisdom, and just what you are putting out in the world, which I now know some of the ingredients of your transition, we all do now, is to serve, to love, to care, to invest yourself in new places, in old people, new activities, because our world needs so much love, caring, and service. There is just not enough to go around.
You bet. Agreed.
Tell everyone where to find many of the things you are doing, and whatever you want to tell us about what's in the works here, because we know now that there are 13 million just surpassed 13 million views on your podcast. You have your show. Tell us what's going on.
So you can watch all the PBS episodes. There are 50 with people like David Byrne and Bryan Stevenson and Samantha Power and Judd Apatow, Steve Kerr, if you're a Warriors fan.
Yes.
And that's all on pbs.org/Kelly. Then the podcast is called Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We put out a long interview every Tuesday, and then we do a short bit on Friday. That's just something I learned that I want to pass along. And then every Sunday we read a eulogy that's been sent in by a listener.
Mm.
And so the pod is Kelly Corrigan Wonders. And then as for books, you know, you can just Google me and they'll pop up.
And there's more coming. Some things are coming.
Someday.
Yes.
Someday.
Yes. Someday. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate this. Thanks for listening, everyone. I know you are thinking about lots of people you are going to share this episode with. And it's not just for the people who are the empty nesters or the bird launchers or whatever we're going to call these people like us. It's also for the people who are in any phase of life to really try to focus on what's important and live with lightness as much as possible in this very complex world we are living in these days. And to remember that these kids are just doing what they do, which is growing up and figuring out how to be in the world just like you did. Thank you for your 5-star reviews. Thank you for being a part of our community. We have such an amazing, caring community. You know what I'm going to ask you to do. Try to be that person you want your child to become and ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com. Follow Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you don't miss an episode. If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.